Welcome to GoGo Radio, exclusively on GoGo.com. I'm Mike Simpson, and today we will be talking about object-oriented programming and how it is implemented in Java. For those of you who don't know me, I am an expert in Java and have been working and teaching in this technology for over 10 years, and in computing technologies in general for over 25 years. I welcome your input, and I look forward to your comments and questions, so be sure to use the question box on this page. Object-oriented programming throws around many interrelated concepts, like attribute, behavior, class, inheritance, interface, and package. Let's take a moment to define these terms as they relate to programming in Java. Objects are key to understanding object-oriented technology. If you look around right now, you'll find many examples of real-world objects. Your dog, your desk, your television set, your bicycle. Real-world objects share two characteristics. They all have a state, and they all have behavior. Dogs have state, their name, their color, their breed, whether or not they're hungry. And they all have behavior. They bark, they fetch, they wag their tail. Bicycles also have state, their current gear, their current speed, and their behavior, changing gears, applying their brakes. Identifying the state and the behavior for real-world objects is a great way to begin thinking in terms of object-oriented programming. For example, if you take a moment to observe the real-world objects that are in your immediate area, such as books, or lamps, or desks, for each object you see, you might ask yourself two questions. What possible states can this object be in? And what possible behaviors can this object perform? And make sure to write down your observations. As you do, you'll notice that real-world objects can vary in complexity. For example, a desktop lamp may have only two possible states, on and off, and two possible behaviors, turn on and turn off. But your desktop radio might have some additional states, on, off, current volume, current station, and they might have some additional behaviors, turn on, turn off, increase volume, decrease volume, seek, scan, and tune into a specific station. You may also notice that some objects in turn may contain other objects. For example, a car object contains tires and batteries and seats, things like that. These real-world observations all translate into the world of object-oriented programming. Now, software objects are conceptually similar to real-world objects. They also consist of state and related behavior. An object stores its state in attributes, fields or variables in some programming languages, and an object exposes its capabilities through behaviors. Those would be methods or functions in some programming languages. Those methods or behaviors operate on an object's internal state or attributes, and those methods or behaviors serve as the primary mechanism for object-to-object communication. Now, hiding that internal state and requiring all the interaction to be performed through an object's methods is known as data encapsulation, and that's a fundamental principle of object-oriented programming. Now, suppose that you were to model a car, say, as a software object. Now, your state information might include the car's current speed, current gear, and the current RPMs. You might provide some methods for changing some gears and changing the speed. That car object, though, would remain in control of how the outside world is allowed to use it. For example, if the car only has 5 gears, your method for changing gears on the cars could reject any value that's less than 1 or greater than 5, meaning you can't shift the car into a gear lower than first, and you can't shift the car into a gear that's higher than fifth gear. So bundling code into individual software objects provides a number of benefits, For example, modularity. The source code for an object can be written and maintained independently of the source code for other objects. So once you create this object, it can be easily passed around inside the system. A second benefit is information hiding. By interacting only with an object's methods, the details of its internal implementation remain hidden from the outside world. A third benefit is code reuse. If the object already exists, maybe it's been written by another software developer, then you can use that object in your program. And this will allow specialists to implement, test, and debug complex, task-specific objects, which you can then trust to run in your own code. And the fourth thing is ease of debugging and ease of plug-in ability. If a particular object turns out to be problematic, then just remove it from your application and plug in a different object as a replacement. This is analogous to fixing a mechanical problem in the real world. If a bolt or a part breaks, you just replace that bolt or replace that part. You don't replace the entire machine. Now, in the real world, you'll often find many individual objects that are all of the same kind. There may be thousands of other cars in existence or thousands of other bicycles of existence, but they'll all be the same make and same model. Each car or each bicycle is built from the same set of blueprints, and therefore will contain the same or similar components. So in object-oriented terms, we would say that your car is an instance of the class of objects known as cars, or your bicycle would be an instance of the class of objects known as bicycles. So a class is the blueprint or template from which individual objects are created. It's kind of like a cookie cutter. The cookie cutter is the design, and then you stamp out individual cookies based upon that design or template. It's easy to remember how the classes work if you remember your ABCs. A for attribute, B for behavior, and C for class. Attributes plus behaviors equals classes. So remember your ABCs. Now, we may have different kinds of objects, but different kinds of objects often have a certain amount in common with each other. For example, trucks, passenger cars, and SUVs all share certain characteristics. They're automotives of some sort. They all have engines and they all have things like that, but they have some things that are in common and some things that are different. Or mountain bikes, road bikes, and tandem bikes all share characteristics of bicycles, meaning that they all have a current speed and they all have a current gear. But each one also has some additional features that will make them different. Tandem bikes have two seats and two sets of handlebars. Road bikes have handlebars that can drop down. And some mountain bikes have an additional chain ring. So what happens when you have a grouping of objects that share some characteristics and some behaviors that are the same, but then have other characteristics that are different? Object-oriented programming allows classes to inherit commonly used state and behavior from other classes. So we have inheritance. So we could have bicycle as being the parent class, or what we call superclass, of mountain bike, road bike, and tandem bike. Or we could have automotive be a parent class or superclass of passenger car, truck, commercial vehicle, things like that. In the Java programming language, each class is allowed to have one direct superclass, in other words, only one parent, and each superclass, each parent, has the potential for an unlimited number of subclasses, or children. The syntax for creating a subclass in Java is pretty simple. At the beginning of your class declaration, you use the extends keyword, followed by the name of the class to inherit from. So, class mountain bike extends bicycle, or class passenger car extends automobile. This would give mountain bike all the same fields and methods as bicycle, or would give the class passenger car all the same fields and methods as automobile, and then allow its code to focus exclusively on the features that make it unique. That's also known as programming by differences, for those of you that know about that design pattern. Now that makes the code for your subclasses easy to read, because it allows you to say, well, a mountain bike is a bicycle with these additional characteristics, or a passenger car is an automobile with these particular characteristics. But you must take care to properly document the state and behavior that each of the superclasses defines, because you're not going to see that code in the source file for each subclass. So if your automotive, for example, defines an engine, you're not going to see engines in your passenger vehicles or your commercial vehicles, because those are defined up in the parent class. Now, as you've already learned, objects define their interactions with the outside world through the methods or the behaviors that they expose. Remember, attributes plus behaviors equal the classes, and objects are instances or occurrences of the classes. So those behaviors form the object's interface or method of interaction with the outside world. The buttons on the front of your television set, for example, are the television set's interface between you and the electrical wiring on the other side of the casing. So you press the power button or hit the button on the remote to turn your television on and off. Now, in the programming world, we express a programming interface in Java as a set of behaviors with empty bodies, a behavior with an empty body being known as a signature, enclosed in curly braces and preceded by the keyword interface and the name of the interface. So you can think of that named interface as a contract, saying that the class that's going to use this interface promises to provide code for each behavior specified in the interface. You then use the interface by putting the keyword implement and the name of the interface just before the opening curly brace of the class definition code. But then inside the curly braces, you have to provide code that goes with each of the signatures in the interface. Basically, you repeat the signature and then you have the curly brace of the code. Note that you may extend, in other words, inherit from only one class, but a class may inherit as many interfaces as it cares to. Last of the terms that we'll look at is a package. Now, a package is a grouping or a namespace that organizes a set of related classes and interfaces. So conceptually, you can think of packages as being similar to different folders on your computer. You might keep HTML pages in one folder, and images in another, and scripts or applications in yet another. Because software written in Java can be composed of hundreds or thousands of individual classes, it makes sense to keep things organized by placing related classes and interfaces into packages. Now, the Java platform provides an enormous class library, which is a set of packages that are suitable for use in your own applications. Now, this library is known as the Java Application Programming Interface, or API for short. And the packages that are in the API represent the tasks that are most commonly associated with general purpose programming. For example, there's a string object that contains attributes and behaviors for character strings. There's a file object that allows a programmer to easily create, delete, inspect, compare, or modify files on a file system. There's a socket object that allows you to create and use network sockets. There are different graphical user interface objects that will control buttons, checkboxes, and anything else related to graphical user interfaces. There's literally thousands of classes from which to choose in the Java API. This allows you, as a programmer, to focus on the design of your particular application rather than having to focus on the infrastructure that's required to make it work. I hope that you have enjoyed today's presentation, and I look forward to your comments and to your questions. You may email your input to me by using the question box found on this page. I will be answering your questions, and I will be replying to your comments in upcoming presentations. If you are interested in viewing my other shows, just search the GoGo Radio Archive for my name, Mike Simpson. If there is a show that you would like for me to do, please send me an email and let me know. Thank you for your time today, and remember to tune into GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com.